Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world. So welcome to the 543rd edition of Sola Dea Gloria, SDG. And this message is titled SDG 543 2022 Endgame Update Number 7. And then later in this message, folks, after you hear all the forbidden truth that the lying fake news will never tell you, we're going to tie it all into how in these perilous times we as believers can clearly hear the voice of God and be absolutely certain of his plan for our lives in these end times. You know, the Bible says in Romans chapter 10, verse 17, that faith, and that's the saving faith of Jesus Christ that we talked about last week, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. So I hope you stay tuned to learn how we can have more saving faith by hearing and how we actually hear the word of God. Folks, the bottom line is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, what are we doing? Well, we're just passing through. So, folks, be sure to always refuse to allow these sociopaths, these Luciferians, to destroy you. Because remember, they have an all-out war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out this latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into the new 9/11 events that are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, how did it start? Well, it all started with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as always, folks, before we get in to the latest news updates, let's review something from last week's episode. Now, 2 weeks ago, we talked about how the crisis du jour has shifted from the invisible enemy known as SARS-CoV-2 and all of its variants to this Russian enemy, Putin, and his 150 million people nation. Folks, this is totally insane. Everybody's flying blue and yellow flags right now to support Ukraine. And I see this as nothing more than another mass formation psychosis. Now, don't get me wrong here, folks. War is awful, and I am not a Putin advocate. I am not a Putin supporter. But to go around acting like the government of Ukraine and Zelensky and his administration is squeaky clean, and we, the great United States, understands everything that's going on over there, that's pure arrogance, folks. I'm telling you, this whole thing is insane. In fact, you remember a couple weeks ago, actually just last week, we had Trey Gowdy's interview from Fox News. You remember the former U.S. rep who's now a talking head on Fox? He had Colonel Douglas McGregor on, who was talking about Putin's next steps in the Ukraine invasion. Well, I'd like to replay that four-minute clip just to set the stage for what we're going to talk about through this show. But remember, this is a decorated combat veteran, an expert in strategic and tactical warfare, especially in the European theater. He has quite a different view on this conflict. And I'd just like to play this four-minute clip and let you form your own opinion. Remember, we've heard this already.
Here is Colonel Doug McGregor, a former senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense. Thank you for joining us. Why do you think Putin is doing this? What is his end game?
Well, Vladimir Putin is carrying through on something that he's been warning us about at least for the last 15 years, which is that he will not tolerate U.S. forces or their missiles on his borders, much as we would not tolerate Russian troops and missiles in Cuba. And we ignored him, and he finally acted. He was not going to allow Ukraine under any circumstances to join NATO. What's happened now is that the battle in eastern Ukraine is really almost over. All the Ukrainian troops there have been largely surrounded and cut off. You have a concentration down in the southeast of 30,000 to 40,000 of them. And if they don't surrender within the next 24 hours, I suspect that the Russians will ultimately annihilate them. That's why Zelensky is meeting with Putin's representatives right now. The game is over. And he's going to have to negotiate the best deal he can get. And we've already told him, the President of the United States has, that if he opts for neutrality for Ukraine, we'll back him. And I think that Vladimir Putin will do that for Western Ukraine. That is the Ukraine beyond the Dnieper River. But behind it in the east, where he is now, I'm not sure what he has planned there, whether he forms another republic, annexes it into Russia, because historically it has been Russian. But the territory west of Ukraine is not. He knows that, and he's happy to live with that as a neutral state.
I am not a military expert. I'm not even an expert on geography. But if he takes Ukraine and Ukraine abuts Poland, then he's going to have a NATO country abutting him. So if that's what he doesn't want, then isn't he going to just have to keep going until he runs out of NATO countries?
I guess I should say it again. He has no interest in crossing the Dnieper and heading west to the Polish border. I think you're going to find from these negotiations he's quite willing to neutralize that territory on the Austrian or the Finnish model. Right now, Russia already touches Estonia and part of Latvia. White Russia, of course, touches Lithuania. He's not interested in going to war with us, and he has an army that's too small for that purpose. And he knows it. His economy is smaller than that of South Korea's. So this is not something that he's looking for. We are imputing to him things that he does not want to do in our usual effort to demonize him and his country. We need to remember that Ukraine is fourth from the bottom of 158 countries in the world as corrupt. Russia is perhaps three or four places above them. This is not the liberal democracy, the shining example that everyone says it is. Far from it. Mr. Zelensky has jailed journalists and his political opposition. I think we need to stay out of it. The American people think we should stay out of it. The Europeans think we should stay out of it. And we should stop shipping weapons and encouraging Ukrainians to die in what is a hopeless endeavor.
So when you say stay out of it, you mean no sanctions, no military aid, just let Russia take the portion of Ukraine they want to take?
Yes, absolutely. I see no reason why we should fight with the Russians over something that they have been talking about for years. We simply chose to ignore it. And more important, the population there is indistinguishable from their own. You know, the thing that's so disturbing is that on the one hand, we will not send our forces to fight, but we are urging Ukrainians to die pointlessly in a fight they can't win. We're going to create a far worse humanitarian disaster than anything you've seen thus far if it doesn't stop.
Thank you for joining us. Welcome back to this special edition of Sunday Night in America, Images of Strength.
So anyways, folks, there you have a talking head, Trey Gowdy, with the current establishment narrative concerning Ukraine and this crisis with Russia. And then an expert, Dr. Douglas McGregor, comes on and gives a valid opinion that's contrary to all the craziness you're hearing on the media right now concerning what's actually going on over there. And Trey Gowdy's face is just in this total look of shock. And he just can't believe there's somebody that's actually talking like this. And then, you know, we can go from this, the establishment position, and somebody who has an alternative opinion, to this guy, just a normal guy. And we played this clip last week. This guy who gets it. This guy's on to something. Listen to this two-minute clip.
Theory on all of you. Putin was WEF along with Trudeau and the rest. I don't believe any of this shit. Yes, there's a war, but in war, it's always the peasants and the peons and the civilians that die, right? So what Putin's done is he's mobilized a bunch of fucking Mongols and fucking Eskimos, Chechens, people without social media,
miles away,
a bunch of 20-year-olds, told them they're on a military exercise, put on a military exercise, then told them they were attacked and sent them into fucking Ukraine. They didn't even know what they're doing. Most of the Russians don't even know what's going on. That's the first thing that's happened. Ukraine's defending itself, but, and not to sound too crazy, Alex Jones, 7 months ago, said Russia's going to invade Ukraine in February. It's all video.
He's been
proven right over and over again. He goes, don't worry, there's going to be a big thing in February, World War III, to distract us. Now, are they trying to distract us from the COVID crimes the last few years? Is it because the international banking system's fucked? Is it because inflation's out of control? Do they need this war for some reason? Because I am at the point now where I have so little faith in politics. I believe there's somebody above Ukraine and above Putin who's made a call to both of them and said, you're the good guy, you're the bad guy.
Go.
We need this now. Go. Send some people to get blown up. Some idiots that no one has a Facebook account for, no one's going to know they're gone because we all live on the internet. No one with an Instagram. Send them to fucking go die. And we're going to cause some issues so we have an excuse for inflation and the banking system failing and the dollar failing and all the COVID lies and everyone getting sick from the vaccine we made them take and every fucking fuck everything else. And I really am at that point now where I have no faith in any of it. I'm not saying the war isn't happening, but I'm saying the reason they're telling us is fucking bullshit.
I agree.
Why is Putin just invading Ukraine to the point of trying to take Kiev?
To what end?
To what end? He ain't going to be able to take Kiev without massive civilian casualties. No one's going to accept it. The Russian populace won't accept it. Half of them have fucking cousins in Kiev.
The Russian military won't accept it, a lot of them.
Most Russian soldiers from Moscow won't fucking attack Kiev. You need some Eskimo idiot. None of this makes sense. So I'm a conspiracy theorist now. None of it makes sense. I'm sitting in the war room. I'm sitting here in case the Russians come. But I don't believe in any of it anymore.
Alex Jones is right.
So this guy gets it, folks. And he was right when he said there are people above Biden, Putin, and Trudeau, and all these other installed, quote-unquote, leaders of the Western democracies. Yeah, there are. There are people above it. Call them whatever you want. Eisenhower called them the industrial military complex. You know, we can go all the way back to the 1700s. Adam Weishaupt called them the Illuminati. We've heard the term deep state. The proverbial, quote-unquote, they, T-H-E-Y. And Trump called them the swamp. But call them whatever you want. And then just last week we had a UFC fighter. Remember him? Interviewed by Tucker Carlson on Fox News. What was his name? Jeremy? He's blasting the Biden regime. He understands the manipulation of our money system, our thoughts by the media, and every other lie that's being told to us concerning all these matters that really affect your life and mine and the lives of our families and freedom. And how about that substitute teacher from Arlington, Virginia? Remember him? Put on permanent suspension because he just asked his civics students, maybe it was a Spanish class, and he was going off script for a little bit, and he just asked them to think. Remember, the big thing here on SDG is critical thinking. Well, now the establishment, the deep state, the Luciferian elite, call them whatever you want, they've coined a term for people who think outside the box, people who can do some critical thinking, people who think for themselves. Now, what they've labeled us is, are you ready? Okay, now, the term they've used is outliers. And here's how it all went down. There's a representative from North Carolina, Representative Madison Cawthorn. And his name's not really that important, but what he says is. So this rep from North Carolina was out on a campaign tour. And let me see if I can call up that clip. I think I have it here somewhere. North Carolina rep. There it is. North Carolina rep Cawthorn calls Zelensky a thug. Okay, now listen to this. 13 seconds.
Senior missiles over to them so they can defend themselves better. But remember that Zelensky is a thug. Remember that the Ukrainian government is incredibly corrupt and it is incredibly evil and it has been pushing woke ideologies and it really is a new woke world.
Okay, so there you have it. In the middle of a campaign tour, he starts talking about some geopolitics. I mean, that's what reps are supposed to do, okay? And he gives a alternative opinion to the current narrative. And then what happens? Well, it stirs up one of the rhinos, the rhino of all rhinos, Lindsey Graham. Now, what Representative Cawthorn said didn't sit well with anybody. You know, the liberal press, the radical Democrats, but even rhinos, folks. And the rhino of all rhinos, Lindsey Graham, slanders Cawthorn for supposedly favoring Putin, calling him a quote-unquote outlier. So Graham was interviewed by the Epoch Times, and this is a quote from Graham. Like 90% of the country is with Ukrainians and is opposed to Putin. So when you see a member of Congress say things like this, what I just played for you, the whole thing, I want you to know they're outliers. So here's Cawthorn speaking in a 13-second clip with no context before or after, and it makes him a quote-unquote outlier. Well, what Graham failed to mention is that Cawthorn also went on to say that he doesn't support Putin's actions, but he's merely pointing out that Ukraine is not squeaky clean. But Graham, this unhinged war hawk, this lunatic who called for a Russian Brutus, remember, this is a sitting member of Congress, he called for a Russian Brutus to assassinate the Russian president. Remember that? And he's calling Cawthorn an outlier for critically thinking? I'm telling you, folks, this is a joke. The criticism of Cawthorn over his observations of Zelensky and his Ukrainian regime, completely unwarranted in a free and truly democratic society. Cawthorn's made it repeatedly clear, time and time again, just as I have, that neither of us approve of Russia's actions. That's not the point here. The point we're trying to make is that there is something deeper going on here. This isn't just Russia bad, Ukraine good. And I think the American people are intelligent enough to look at the facts and make up their minds, yet the media refuses to give them the facts. And what we're going to do today is share some of those facts with you. So what I'm telling you here and what this show is absolutely not an endorsement of Putin. But I'm telling you, the attacks of people that want to share some other information, people like me, people like Representative Cawthorn, people like Colonel Douglas McGregor, and so many others, they're being silenced now. They're being maligned. They're being slandered, just like people who had a different opinion concerning or a different perspective concerning the entire scamdemic narrative. And who ended up being right on all that? So the point here is that Zelensky and his government are by no means the darlings of Western democracies. They are corrupt, genocidal, filled and infected with neo-Nazis. And if you don't believe what I just said there, stay tuned because we have proof. And you'll hear it in the show. Bottom line, folks, the truth is that the Ukraine has been overrun by Nazis. President Zelensky, he's a very bad character. He's working with the globalists and the World Economic Forum, Davos, the Bilderbergers. These globalists, against the interests of his own people and the peoples of all the countries of the world, and he's moving us towards that classless global plantation known as the Great Reset, where you'll own nothing and be happy. And I'm telling you, folks, I will not move one inch away from my assessment of this situation ever. No matter how much flowery rhetoric is put out there concerning Zelensky, I won't do it. You know, when a corrupt person like Zelensky and his administration use humans as shields to hide bio labs, weapons caches, personal wealth, army groups, you know, Zelensky is moving army groups into schools and hospitals. They don't talk about that on the media. That's exactly what some of the Middle Eastern leaders that the United States went after were doing. They were using innocent civilians as human shields. And if you look at these supposedly unwarranted bombing attacks all around the country and superimpose a biolabs map on top of that, those are the exact areas where attacks are being made by Russia. Folks, just take a look at the Middle East and all the civilian casualties the U.S. military actions over the past several decades has wreaked upon those people. And even recently with the usurper-in-chief Biden and his regime, you know, they have drone strikes. U.S. has drone strikes, and they take out innocent people. Where's the outcry for that? I'm telling you, folks, war is ugly. And war never resolves anything except by force. And that's usually resorted to when diplomacy and trade and all these other areas are cut off or ignored as a solution. And I'm telling you, folks, the truth is that George Soros funded the Orange Revolution behind the 2014 toppling of the legit government in Ukraine. And what they did is, along with the Obama administration, they installed this World Economic Forum puppet, the professional actor himself, Zelensky. And just like Soros and the other Western oligarchs, people like Zuckerberg and his ilk toppled the 2020 election, well, these same type of people with this dastardly vision for the future, a vision where we're all basically plantation slaves and the 1% control the world, that's the same thing they did here and what they did in Ukraine and so many other places around the world. These color revolutions in Egypt and other Middle Eastern countries, all funded by Soros. Now get this, Soros has been outlawed in Hungary and Russia. You know, that makes me wonder. When I hear about Soros controlling so much in our government, in fact, he's got his fingers all through our State Department, and he's starting to place governors, Terry's estate across the country, and he's getting into local elections. It makes you wonder whether our media-manipulated absolute hatred of Russia is actually some kind of war between Soros and Putin and other people who oppose this. Now, again, I'm not making Putin some kind of squeaky clean guy, because he's not. He's an evil man too. But this is a much more complicated situation. But more on that later in the Kabuki Theater update. Right now, it's time for Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, let's get started with the coronavirus heist. Now, before we get into the latest scamdemic news, here's some food for thought. You know, the first variant of COVID-19 was Delta, I believe it was. And then we went to Omicron. And you know how that was all just so like, it's not going to work. The jab's not going to work. You need a booster and all this other stuff. And then there comes Florona. Did you hear about the Florona variant? It's actually when you get SARS-CoV-2 and the flu at the same time. And then, like I said, we get through the Delta and Omicron variants, and now there's a new one, Deltacron. Did you hear about that? You know, if you haven't seen these, just do a web search and type in Florona. Type in Deltacron. Well, it's a mix of Delta and Omicron. You know what it keeps reminding me of? You remember that show the kids used to watch called Transformers? You know, those cars that would transform into robots? Well, this virus keeps transforming like those Transformers. And you can name them whatever you want, you know? But they're pushing people into this state of emotional turmoil, just like the Transformers did, you know, and all their variants, and the battle with the sentience in that story. You know, the autonomous robots, the Autobots and the Decepticons. This whole thing is so sophomoric. You know, this virus, it just transforms into other forms. Well, the observation I'm trying to make here, folks, is that regardless of whatever it is, some invisible virus and all of its morphed forms, you know, as a transformer, or the invading Russian armies, what are they all doing? They're all stirring the emotion of fear. Now, emotions are the shallowest part of our being. They're like the surface of the ocean, smooth one day, chuous and full of 30-foot waves the next. Whereas truth, it's immutable, unchanging. No matter how you try to spin it or disguise it or hypnotize people, truth is truth. And the truthers, the people investigating these things to better understand what actually is happening here in this world, they're being attacked on all platforms everywhere. It doesn't matter if you investigate the Hunter Biden laptop or the election of 2020 or the scamdemic or now this crisis in Ukraine. If you have a narrative that's contrary to what the establishment is saying, you're ostracized, you're put out, you're deplatformed, and now it's even getting worse. And we're going to get into that a bit later. But the Department of Homeland Security is actually calling you a terrorist. Doesn't matter, folks. And here's why, because knowledge is power, and the establishment knows that. And the more you and I know, we the people know, the less we'll be deceived, and the less they'll be able to manipulate us with fear. Remember, our emotions are in the shallowest part of our being. The deepest part of our being is our spirit. You know, the lamp of the Lord, which needs to be filled with the oil of the Lord, the Holy Spirit, to give us light so that our mind, our will, and our emotions, our soul, and then tell our bodies what to do. Never forget, folks, knowledge is truly power. But don't take my word for it. Study it for yourself. Have you heard about this university, UCSF, University of California, San Francisco maybe? It's in the university system in California. That's the proof. But the UCF, one more time, the UCSF professor, Aditi Bhargava, has just gotten IRB approval for her study to find out just how safe these COVID jabs are. Think about this, folks. She just got approval now for this. What's going on here? Why now, after hundreds of millions, billions of people around the globe have gotten the jab? Now they're going to see how safe it is? Her goal is to survey 2.5 million people globally. And she's asking people to fill out this report on their vaccination status, regardless of whether they've been injured or not. Everyone hearing this right now needs to fill this out and send it to your friends, encourage them to do so too, because now the establishment wants to determine whether that what they've been marketing and pushing for the last year and a half is safe or not.
What?
Yeah, that's right, Paul. I thought the experts said that it was safe too. In fact, last week we listened to that ad with Elton John. Remember that? And didn't Elton say in it that the experts have said jabs are safe?
It's really important to know that the vaccines have all been through and met the necessary safety and quality standards.
Now, just when the mRNA station is being questioned, this out. The Pfizer CEO back, he's gone. There's no more Fauci. Now we have this CEO of Pfizer. What's his name? Albert Bourla. He's everywhere now. So you have to wonder what's going on here with Fauci. Well, Fauci has been exposed for what he truly is. He's a fraud. But here's Pfizer CEO in an interview where some tough questions are asked. And you can hear him starting to backpedal on this mRNA jab. Isn't this precious? But he was on a show hosted by Jonathan Capehart. And Capehart asked Bourla, this was last Thursday, why Pfizer decided to pursue this experimental, and he used that term, experimental mRNA vaccine, despite the nascency of the developing technology. So listen to this two-minute clip.
I want to get a little into the weeds here and the mRNA technology. When you and your colleagues were trying to decide which route to go down, the traditional vaccine route or the mRNA route, you write that it was, quote, most counterintuitive to go the mRNA route, and yet you went that route. Explain why.
It was counterintuitive because Pfizer was mastering, or let's say we had very good experience and expertise with multiple technologies that could give a vaccine. Adenoviruses, that some of the other vaccines are. We were very good in doing that. protein vaccines. We were very good in doing that, and plus many other technologies. The mRNA was the technology that we had less experience, only 2 years working on this. And actually, mRNA was a technology that never delivered a single product until that day. Not vaccine, not any other medicine. So it was very counterintuitive, and I was surprised when they suggested to me that this is the way to go. And I questioned it, and I asked them to justify, how can you say something like that? But they came and they were very, very convinced that this is the right way to go. They felt that the 2 years that of work on mRNA since 2018, together with BioNTech, to develop a flu vaccine, made them believe that the technology is mature and we are at the cusp of delivering a product. So they convinced me. I follow my instinct that they know what they are saying. They're very good. And we made this very difficult decision at that time.
Followed my instinct? Folks, you don't follow hunches or gut feels when you're doing science. You follow the facts. You follow the truth. You establish some sort of hypothesis, and then you test it out. And they've known for decades that developing a corona vaccine is nearly impossible because it has all sorts of adverse side effects. There was the animal study, the ferret study, I believe it was, from 2012, and Dr. Dolores Cahill covered that in great detail at the beginning of this entire scamdemic. She warned people there would be all sorts of adverse reactions, complications, the cytokine storm, remember that? Now it's coming out that all of this is true. So I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, have we, the truth tellers in this freedom movement, been vindicated? I've actually been thinking that. Have we been proven right and the proverbial they proven wrong? You know, just this past Monday, I wake up and Dr. Malone's blog is out, and it's titled, How Does It Feel to Be Vindicated? And then he answers his own question by saying, depressing and demoralizing. But I'd do it again in a heartbeat. And guess what, folks? I'm the same. I've been slandered. I have been maligned. I've been attacked by friends and family for my positions on all these matters. But I stand on truth, folks. And I don't care what the media is saying. I don't care what everybody and their brother's thinking. I look into the facts. I dig deep. The Holy Spirit's given you and me a power of discernment, and we need to do that. Now, there have been so many mistakes made by the ilks of Fauci and Walensky and these so-called experts because they're all operating with an agenda. Their goal isn't to find and determine the truth. No, their goal is to advance an agenda. This has nothing to do with your health or mine or public health in general. It has everything to do with people control and the Great Reset. And one element of this Great Reset is population reduction. We've talked about this over and over in this show. Now, an excellent summary of the incompetence and the guilt of these fraudsters was done by Thomas Harrington, who writes for the Brownstone Institute. And he wrote this article titled, Doctors Walensky and Offit, It's All in Good Fun. Now, folks, I can't stomach this interview that Walensky did with some of her ilk. You know, she's sitting among all of her friends high-fiving it. And Mr. Harrington, he points out these clips that are up on Twitter. And you can find them, or if you can't, just send me an email at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and I'll send you the links. So he has gone to Phil Kirpin's tweets, where he's composed all these little clips of Walensky just kind of being this smug aristocrat that she is. And there's another excellent thread out there by a guy named Alexandros Marinos. And he's focusing on the self-amused Dr. Offit, you know, one of her sidekicks. And I recommend, if you can stomach it, that you listen to these interviews. But I just want to go through a little bit of what Mr. Harrington summarized in his All Good, It's All in Good Fun article with the Brownstone Institute. So just a couple quotes. And I'm telling you, his thoughts parallel mine and what Dr. Malone wrote in his blog. Here's just a little bit of what he wrote. All those moves to censor and professionally destroy those who had opinions different from the CDC, its actions rooted precisely in the presumption that science is, in fact, black and white, and that those who get it wrong need to be professionally punished, well, that's all a figment of your primitive imagination. Or as Dr. Harold Piner put it in his Nobel Prize speech when referring to the U.S. penchant for wantonly destroying other cultures, it never happened. Nothing ever happened. Even while it was happening, it wasn't happening. It didn't matter. It was of no interest. Folks, that sounds like something out of 1984 in the memory hole, doesn't it? And continuing with the quote, so yes, excessive psychic detachment turns fellow human beings into self-referential objects of our own minds and can be rather problematic. Indeed, I think, though I can't be sure, that psychologists even have a term for it, and that term is psychopath. Yes, folks, these bureaucrats, these minion of the Luciferians are psychopaths. You know, Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, Anthony Fauci, Rochelle Walensky, Paul Offit, Janet Woodcock, Rick Bright, Jessica Cecil, and don't forget her Trusted News Initiative. These folks are psychopaths. They're hell-bent on achieving their goal, regardless of what the cost is in human life or suffering. They don't care. Folks, the entire scandemic narrative is falling apart, and they know it. Wait until the full aftermath of these death jabs and their complications are all assessed. But then in the meanwhile, here's what you see. So we just heard Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, being asked a hard question in that last interview, and he was backpedaling a bit. Now here he is again on Bloomberg, and he's got some softballs being pitched to him. So listen to this. He's out there pushing his new book, you know, and how great what Pfizer did was. As all this data is coming in of the adverse reactions, this is pathetic. But here's an example of this, what do you want to call it, smugness of these psychopaths? Just listen to this.
We welcome now the leader of the team that won that race. He is Dr. Albert Bourla. He's chairman and CEO of Pfizer, and he's the author of the brand new book, Moonshot, Inside Pfizer's 9-Month Race to Make the Impossible Possible. Thank you so much for being back with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
It's a fascinating book, as I told you. It's a good read. I recommend it to everybody. But I'm going to just read one passage because it takes us back to April of 2020. And we may forget now how bad things were, particularly in a place like New York City, what was happening in our hospitals, the lack of ventilators. And you had your team together. They'd worked hard. They'd come up with a really aggressive plan. They proposed it to you. They were very proud of it. And you said, no thanks. And what you said was, it could not be done. That is to say, really speed this up. But it had to be done. There is a time for consensus building, and there's a time to push. This was the time to push. So take us back to that moment and how your team reacted when, as I say, they'd come up with a really aggressive plan and you said, yeah, not good enough.
Well, they tried to understand what do I mean not good enough, because they thought that this is the best that anyone could dream of having. And I knew that they were right, but also I knew that if we fail, then we have to deal with way bigger things than what could impact the company or the America would impact the world. So I told them, there's no option of failing, and there's no way that we can do it, because failure is not an option, and if not us, then who?
Did they try to talk you out of it? Did they try to say, you just don't understand, doctor, it can't be done?
They were silent. I didn't leave much room to maneuver, because I knew that if I would, then doubts would start seeding in their minds. So it was very clear to me, we need to get it by October. This is when the new wave will come. Go and do it. And actually, I told them, and it was a little bit of a psychological blackmail, go and calculate how many people will die if we're not successful with the vaccine by October.
So you basically said you've got 8 months, more or less, nine months to get this done. Something that in success, and it wasn't guaranteed there was any success, would be 8 or 10 years. So this is a revolutionary shift. How did they get it done? How did they reinvent the whole thing that fundamentally?
I think that's the thing, that the goal was so hairy, so obscene, that they had to think out of the box. If you ask them, instead of 10 years, to do it in 8 years, they will try to improve the current processes. If you ask them to do it in 8 months, they have to refigure everything. And this is what they did. The same is with manufacturing, which I call in the book the second miracle. In Pfizer, we're making 200 million doses of all vaccines, across all manufacturing sites in a year. I didn't ask them now with COVID to make 300. I told them make 3 billions. They couldn't do it by improving the current processes. They had to think completely out of the box, and this is what they did.
And so now we have this wonderful vaccine that so many of us have had. It relieves a lot of the anxiety as well as some of the disease that we all have. What's next for your mRNA? For example, an Omicron variant, is that on the way? Is it a fourth booster? Is it young children? What's next from your point of view? What are the priorities?
Of course. First of all, I think we have the vaccines and we have the treatments. And when it comes to the vaccines, the goal is always to stay ahead of the virus. Actually, today in the morning before coming here, I was reviewing new data of all our studies. They look encouraging, but I can't speak now. We need to wait until we see the full set of the data.
Okay, that's enough. That rambles on for another 5 minutes, but it's just some high-fiving among the establishment elite. You know, folks, the CDC has known since January 2021 that the vaccines were unsafe, yet they said nothing. And this data is in public view. And the vaccines are way too dangerous for human use. In fact, by February 2021, this was much more obvious and you could say conclusive. Yet to this day, the CDC has never acknowledged this safety concern. Never. Even with the following types of reports that are coming out almost daily. Did you hear that the world's number two female golfer is sidelined indefinitely due to an inexplicable blood clot? This is Olympic gold medal winner Nelly Korda. She's 23 years old and recently posted her diagnosis just a week after that model, Hailey Bieber. I guess she married Justin Bieber. She's 25, and she was hospitalized for a similar blood clot in her brain. Folks, when's the last time you heard 20-year-olds having blood clots? Well, Nelly Korda and Hailey Bieber join this growing list of otherwise young and healthy people who are being diagnosed with complications ranging from these blood clots to heart conditions. In fact, now most physicals for high school and college sports requires EKGs and heart assessments prior to being signed off to be an athlete in that particular sport. Folks, this is unheard of. Yet the media is saying nothing about the fact that these obvious conditions have a root cause, and that root cause is the COVID jab. The truth is that the reason so many young people, whether they had COVID-19 or not, are falling by the wayside with these strange ailments is the one thing they all have in common is they got the jab. Folks, this isn't my opinion, but rather the expert opinion of many doctors and scientists who have been suppressed by social media, the mainstream media. They're being attacked, maligned, all sorts of things. Yet our corrupt death cult government and the corporate media refuse to even consider what I'm saying here and all these other experts are saying as a possibility. Or to be more precise, they are willfully, folks, denying what most of us see to be true. The true root cause of these excessive deaths and morbidities. Folks, right now it's at 1,000x. And what do I mean by that? Well, what I'm saying is these death jabs have 1,000 times more mortalities and morbidities associated with them than any other vaccine that's been released and tracked by the VAERS data system. 1,000 times more. And this is appalling. Yet you know how the mainstream media is reporting on all this? Well, here's one of the latest reports from the mainstream media. That's right, folks. They aren't talking about it. And you know there are two ways to lie. You can lie by telling an untruth, or you can lie by failing to tell the truth. But we have to keep moving. It's time for the Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. In Japanese, ka means solve, boo means dance. Ki means steal from the verb, kabu meaning to slam or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the Latin curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or it'll hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up and down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030 and the new world. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
You know, folks, it's getting really, really creepy out there. The DA at Department of Homeland Security released these new rules for extremism. And this came out earlier last year, but the Department of Homeland Security set these guidelines on extremist behavior, which include, and listen to this, questioning the 2020 presidential election or promoting conspiracy theories about the COVID pandemic and the mandates. So everything I'm doing on this show, trying to bring truth, has been labeled as extremist behavior. Now, this memo was titled Report to the Secretary of Homeland Security Domestic Violent Extremist Internal Review, Observations, Findings, and Recommendations. Now, in this, they claim that the socio-political developments of the 2020 election and the COVID pandemic could spur domestic violent extremists to engage in violence. So this was out back in March 2021, and I don't know at that time whether we saw the magnitude of these statements, but I think it's becoming clear now. You know, the fact is, folks, that over half of the U.S. population questions or doubts the results of the 2020 election. And these guidelines call for more funding for this. And they have this program inside there they want to fund, and it's called the Insider Threat Program, to use your neighbors to identify and purge anyone who may be one of these extremists. This is sick, folks. And I'm telling you, it sounds a lot like what both the communists and the Nazis did in the past. But I thought the world had overcome all these dangerous and dark ideologies. I thought communism was dead. I thought the Nazis were a thing of the past. I thought all of this was done and we're living in democracy. Folks, remember what we've learned about democracy. Democracy is essential socialism. Do you remember that song that Leonard Cohen wrote? Well, folks, that's a little snippet from Leonard Cohen's classic Democracy. And I encourage you to go out there on YouTube or one of these streaming services and listen to the entire song. Download the lyrics and read them, folks. They're prescient. They're prophetic. This man got it. Democracy is indispensable to socialism. Folks, things are not as they appear. Like I've been talking about this Ukrainian situation, it's true kabuki theater. And like I said earlier in the show, the fake news is making Zelensky and his regime out to be the model of free and civil society. And folks, I'm telling you, that's nothing further from the truth. When they go along and tell you that the entire foundations of Western democracy depend on us helping Zelensky. You know, and this guy's been going to the Congress and to Parliament and in Great Britain, and I think he was speaking in some other country too. France, was it? All he's doing is regurgitating old, tired, worn-out phrases from these globalists that want to enslave us. And what's going on here is a big fat lie. The truth is that Ukraine is the money laundering capital for the West. You know, all of Biden's and Pelosi's and the Clintons and even Mitt Romney's ill-gotten gains are laundered through the Ukraine. Folks, it's one of the most corrupt, oppressive governments in the world, and yet today the Western media and the governments of the world are making Zelensky and his regime to be the poster children for free and fair government. This is insane. It truly is. But some can see right through it. And one of these people is Professor and Dr. Francis Boyle. Now, he's a human rights lawyer, and he's a professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law. And he says that NATO is using Ukraine to surround Russia with bio labs, biological weapons, kinetic weapons, in an effort to advance their agenda. So I'd like you to listen to this interview where Dr. Francis Boyle, and he's at a lefty institution too, you know, the University of Illinois, Chicago College of Law. But this guy gets it. Here's a two-minute clip. Dr. Francis Boyle pulls no punches and says it like it is.
We have an international, transnational cult of Nazi biowarfare death scientists like Tony Fauci, who has been up to his eyeballs in this for Reagan. When I got involved in this around 1983 or 4, Reagan put Tony Fauci in charge of our offensive biological warfare weapons program, and that is how long he has been there. And then he has trained, and Francis Collins, of course, the former head of NIH, he's involved in this too. As we know, they funded the research that led to COVID-19, that offensive biological warfare weapon with gain-of-function property. And then that just spread all over the world. Yes, it's a cult of these people, including over there in China as well, that Wuhan bat queen. She was trained at the Galveston BSL-4 down there in Texas, which is, again, part of the offensive U.S. biological warfare industry. The British are a part of this, the French, the Israelis. So we have a network and a cult of Nazi biowarfare death scientists, which gets back to the point you raised about these athletes. We have to resist this Nazi medical tyranny by these death scientists like Fauci and Walensky, and we can go through the whole list.
Thank you, Dr. Boyle, for speaking the truth. He's one of the only ones, but he's not the only one out there speaking out. There's also Jimmy Dore. I don't know if you've ever heard of Dore, but he's a American comedian, a political commentator, and a YouTube personality who gets tens of millions of views every month. He's the host of the Jimmy Dore Show. It's a comedy talk show that he does on YouTube, and he interviews guests from political, economic, and scientific areas. And recently, he did a show titled Ukraine Neo-Nazis Infiltrate Every Level of Military and Government. So here's Jimmy Dore, and I want to set up a little background before we hear this clip. Here's Jimmy Dore doing a special show where he shows that the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the resulting cries from "We are all Ukraine" have been a kabuki play of sorts to downplay the truth that there are neo-Nazis and Ukrainian paramilitary groups that embrace everything that this country and the Western world fought against in World War II. You know, the Ukrainian armed forces and even parts of their government are now infiltrated by these neo-Nazis. And in this clip, Jimmy and Max Blumenthal from the Gray Zone discuss reports in great detail of these neo-Nazis in Ukraine. So this is a rather long clip. It's a 12-minute clip. And then next week we'll get into the second part of this, about another 12-minute clip. But just listen to Jimmy Dore. And then in the next one, Max Blumenthal actually gives some input. But you'll hear him talking to somebody occasionally. Well, that's Gray Zone's Max Blumenthal, another great platform to listen to. You can just go out there and search for Gray Zone Max Blumenthal, and you'll hear a lot of good stuff on his podcasts also. But here's Jimmy Dore on the Ukraine neo-Nazi issue that we just heard Dr. Boyle allude to. Folks, this isn't conspiracy theory. This is fact. But listen to Jimmy Dore.
Look at this. So people are saying just total fiction how Putin is using Nazi propaganda to defend invasion of Ukraine. So they're saying there's the allegation that the Ukraine military has and the government has neo-Nazis infiltrated and embraced by the government, actually. And here's also here's the PBS NewsHour. Remember, it's funded by oligarchs and the government, so you're not getting the truth from PBS, even though you think you are. You're just as bad as anything else out there, PBS. Analysis. Putin's claim that war on Ukraine is to target Nazis is absurd. Here's why. So he says he's going to fight those Nazis. So in case you don't know what's happening, there was supposed to be an agreement in 2014 called the Minsk Agreement, which after they overthrew the government in Ukraine, they kept shelling the people in eastern Ukraine, right, who didn't want to go along with the overthrow. And so those people are ethnic Russians. So they identify with Russia, and they didn't want to be part of this new undemocratic government. And so they would shell them, and they killed 14,000 of them over the last 8 years, even though there was supposed to be a ceasefire in 2015 called the Minsk Agreement. And so Putin says he's going in to stop that slaughter of those people in the east of Ukraine, which the Ukraine government hasn't stopped shelling. Now, that is true. Now, I'm also against his invasion. War is not a good idea. So, but here, there's PBS claiming that there is no, the claim of Nazis is wrong. And there was also People magazine got into it. So here's Alex Rubenstein. So here's, we're going to lay this all out for you. This will be nice. He says, watch Yevhen Karas, the leader of Ukraine's neo-Nazi terror gang, C-14's speech from Kiev earlier this month. Straight from the horse's mouth, he dispels the many narratives pushed by the left, the mainstream media, and the State Department. So he's going to brag about he's not denying he's a Nazi. And he's going to brag that of all the influence they had in the coup and that the fact that the coup wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the Nazis. Watch this. So he says Maidan was the victory of the nationalist ideas. That was the coup that took place. That was the coup that took place. And he said that was the victory for the nationalist ideas. Well, what does nationalist mean? It means Nazi ideas, right? Okay. Nationalists were the key factor there, and clearly at the front lines. Now, there is a lot of speculation saying, well, there were only a few neo-Nazis. LGBT and foreign embassies are saying there were not much neo-Nazis on Maidan, maybe about 10% of the real ideological ones. The thing is that such a thing can say only a moron that never was at war. And don't understand that those 10%, maybe even less, 8%, but how much they are and how much more effective in the proportion of influence. So he's saying, yeah, we might have only been 10% or 8%, but what was our effect? That's what he's saying. What was the proportion of our influence? How much of their effectiveness was? It was endless, he says. He says, if not for those 8% of neo-Nazis, the effectiveness of Maidan would have dropped by 90%. So he's saying most of the credit has to go to these right-wing nationalist neo-Nazis for the coup. So it's the numbers. It's not the point. Also, when they started firing on the crowds, people thought that was the government doing that. Turns out now there's lots of credible evidence that the Nazis were doing it. Like now, some left-wingers like Bol Foundation and so on, they're trying to count numbers to diminish. So the reason why they're doing that is that now the West doesn't want to recognize the Nazis in Ukraine because it's bad for them. It's a bad look. And this guy's saying something like, there weren't many, there were that many nationalists, they had that much influence. If not for the nationalists, that whole thing, meaning the coup, would have turned into a gay parade. That's what he said. So, okay, so now he's got, there's more. Max, you want to comment on any of that?
Well, let's keep it rolling.
Okay, so here's more. He says, we were now been given so much weaponry. Not because some say the West is helping us. So they've been given all this weaponry from the West. And some say it's because they want to help you. And he says, no, that's not why. He says, not because the West wants the best for us, but because we perform the tasks set by the West. Because we are the only ones who are ready to do them. Because we have fun. We have fun killing, and we have fun fighting. And they're like, wow, let's see what's going to happen. And that is the reason for the new alliance, Turkey, Poland, Britain, and Ukraine. So he's saying, we're starting this whole new thing. There's going to be a whole new power alliance, and it doesn't rely on NATO. We are the flagman here because we have started a war. He's taking credit for starting this war with Russia. We have started a war that has not been seen for 60 years. So imagine how many weapons we have, how many veterans that we have. And imagine Russia falls apart and it turns into five different Russians or something like that. We have the most javelins on the European continent. Maybe only the UK has more javelin missiles than they do. The potential of those armed forces will immediately become a problem for all those who oppose us. For all those who are trying to give us problems. It is our joy and our sorrow. You need to understand why. Yes, it is hard. Not because we are Ukrainians and our asses suffered for 300 years. Why finally everything good, not just given to us? We are such good people. So he's acting, he's mocking people as being crybabies saying that. And so, but the real reason, he says, and he said, oh, those people, we want to join Europe. He doesn't want. This is what he says. No, we are a huge, powerful state. And if we come to power, it will be both joy and problems for the whole world. Therefore, it is a huge, ambitious task. We live in a very cool time. I don't know what this translation means. That's a weird translation. We live in a very cool time. And that is why there is an extremely ambitious, cool goal. See, I don't know what that means. Not just become part of a European family that has already collapsed. This is about new political alliances on the global level, new political challenges. So let's just recap what he said. Ukraine is being armed as pawns of the West because we have fun killing. We have started a war. We have the most javelins on the European continent, and the European family has already collapsed, and Maidan would have been a gay parade if not for the Nazi influence. And so that guy's the leader of the C-14s. The C-14s was started as a youth wing of the Svoboda Party, founded by Ole Tenahambak. Is that how do you say his name, Mac?
Tianbak.
And he's pictured there. Here he is shaking hands. So this guy, who's... big neo-Nazi shaking hands with this guy who's our president. C-14 signed an agreement with Kiev city government to patrol its streets in early 2018. And what happened? Well, months later, it began a campaign of pogroms against Romani camps. So that's gypsies, right? That's, and so they're going around killing them.
They're beating them. And it was sort of an official city program that they went down to the train station or the train tracks and just pepper sprayed a bunch of very destitute Roma people and chased them away and brutalized them.
So let me just say C-14, the 14 in C-14 refers to the 14 words coined by American neo-Nazi David Lane. And those words are, we must secure the existence of our people and future for white children. So so the neo-Nazi Svoboda Party was co-founded by that guy I just showed you shaking hands with, Joe Biden, and a guy named Andriy Paruby, who served as the chairman of Ukrainian parliament from 2016 to 2019. So do you see what, so you see where I'm getting at when I start throwing around the word, the term neo-Nazi intertwined with their government, and was welcomed at the U.S. Senate by Joe Biden's foreign policy man, Michael Carpenter. And this is from The Nation from 2019. 5 years ago, Ukraine's Maidan uprising ousted President Viktor Yanukovych to the cheers and support of the West. Politicians and analysts in the United States and Europe not only celebrated the uprising as a triumph of democracy, but denied reports of Maidan's ultranationalism, smearing those who warned about the dark side of the uprising as Moscow puppets and useful idiots. Freedom was on the march in Ukraine. So anybody who pointed this out was called a Putin puppet and a useful idiot. Just like anybody who said Russiagate was garbage. Today, increasing reports of far-right violence, ultranationalism, and erosion of basic freedoms are giving the lie to the West's initial euphoria. There are neo-Nazi pogroms against the Roma, rampant attacks on feminists and LGBT groups, book bans, and state-sponsored glorification of Nazi collaborators. Post-Maidan Ukraine is the world's only nation to have a neo-Nazi formation in its armed forces. The Azov Battalion was initially formed out of the neo-Nazi gang, the Patriot of Ukraine, and here it is. That's their symbol. Arsen Avakov, the new Minister of Internal Affairs of Ukraine, after the overthrow of Yanukovych's government, he issued in April 13, 2014, a decree authorizing creating the new paramilitary force from civilians up to 12,000 people. So
there you have it. We'll cut it there, folks. So these C-14 leaders are saying things like, if we come to power, joy and problems for the whole world. Joy for those who are advocating this one world government, this great reset, and problems for all freedom-loving people around the globe. And that's the problem. So Ukraine power is rooted in these neo-Nazis. They started the war. They have more javelins than anybody in Europe. And they view the entire European Union as failed. And if it wasn't for them, the neo-Nazis, these leaders of C-14, Europe would be nothing but a gay parade. They see the way that Soros has used the Orange Revolution to destroy Western values. They're part of the problem, problem, reaction, solution. And this is going to move us all to the Great Reset. You know, C-14, remember what he said there. Jimmy Dore said that David Lane, the neo-Nazi from the U.S., had 14 words that were embraced by these nationalists. Folks, the problem is much more serious than it seems, and no one, stream media, is reporting on this. Jimmy Dore did a piece here, and we're going to pick up on it next week and finish it, that would be worthy of a segment on 60 Minutes 25, 30 years ago. Yet you don't hear anybody in the mainstream meeting reporting like this. The fact is, folks, that these neo-Nazis have merged with the Ukrainian state and the authorities of the state, and it's not easy to discern them anymore. They're mixed in there. They have a genetic cleansing program to eliminate all but their ethnic race. This is Nazism. We're going to get more to that a little later in the show. So all the people presented in the Jimmy Dore show either work for what's known as the SSU, the Security Service of Ukraine, or are volunteer assistants for it. So these people have a lot of support among the political parties of the Ukraine and the government in Ukraine as well. And they're being funded by the Ukrainian oligarchs. You know, we hear all about the Russian oligarchs, but nobody talks about the Ukrainian oligarchs made rich by the Western money that's being pumped through that country, you know, for Burisma and everything with Hunter Biden. This stuff is all real, folks. Now, some nationalist formations, also known as neo-Nazis, are directly financed by the monies coming from our TARP funds and all this that just disappear. You know, Ukrainian funding, Ukrainian support, the monies cannot be accounted for. And that's because they're being laundered, folks. So Ukraine has been the merging of nationalistic from these neo-Nazis and state or national government. So it's been 8 years now since the CIA Tavistock propaganda for this Orange Revolution, where Zelensky was placed into power, is another example of brainwashing, mass formation, mind control, call it whatever you want. So the fake news reports that Russia advances into Ukraine and the Ukrainian people are giving this great fight. And that's the fake news narrative we hear right now. The Ukrainians are fighting for the good and the freedom of the West. Russia bad. Russia wicked. And you know, all war is bad. All war is wicked. But to paint this as black and white is pure programming, pure mind control. The fact is that the media, through the methods developed by the CIA and the Tavistock Institute in England, have been tuned so finely that they can change the psyche of the American public or any other populace through their media in a matter of 2 weeks. So then you can even believe this asshat comedian, Zelensky, and pardon me for my crude language, folks, but people of this world are being duped. It's even gone so far now that comedians are embracing it, and they're using these late-night shows like Stephen Colbert pushing the Ukraine propaganda. Listen to this in one of his shows. I think it was on, was it St. Patrick's Day or was it the Ides of March? It was the 15th or 17th, his show this past week. Listen to how Stephen Colbert just pushes this Ukrainian propaganda.
Welcome, everybody, to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It is today, check your calendars, it's March 15th, otherwise known as the Ides of March. And I invite the Russian oligarchs in Putin's inner circle to celebrate the day in whatever way seems most appropriate. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Just take a stab at it. Putin's war has been brutal and monstrous for Ukraine, but it's also not going so great for Russia. Almost all of the Russian advances in Ukraine remain stalled. In fact, U.S. intelligence, actually, yes, I agree. Why not? Let us celebrate while we can. In fact, U.S. intelligence actually intercepted the latest progress report from the Russian military, and the invasion is buffering. It's buffering.
So there you can hear the establishment narrative. Russia failing, Ukraine fighting the good fight. And he tries to tie it all into humor, you know. And that's a classic ploy. But let's listen to a clip by Colonel Douglas McGregor. This was recently done on InfoWars. And I think it gives you a better perspective of why these advances have been stalled from a strategic battlefield of an expert. So let's listen to Colonel Douglas McGregor on this interview on InfoWars talk about how, from his perspective, Russia's winning in Ukraine and why there's a stall. A three-minute clip.
What do you make so far of the dominant narrative we're getting here in the U.S., that militarily, that this has been a disaster for Russia, that Ukraine is putting up fierce resistance, that Putin mm-hmm. did not expect and has inflicted serious military defeat on the Russian invaders.
Well, as to the last point, it's very obvious that what Ukrainian forces are still active are entirely surrounded, cut off, and isolated in various towns and cities. The Ukrainian forces are incapable of anything but an occasional pinprick attack on something that doesn't appear to be very robust or dangerous. So the war, for all intents and purposes, has been decided. The issue for the Russians from the very beginning has been, how do we proceed without killing large numbers of civilians and inflicting a lot of property damage? And Putin gave very strict orders from the outset that they were to avoid these things. The problem with avoiding it is that it has slowed the progress of the operation to the point where it has given false hope both to the Ukrainians, but I think has been seized on by people in the West to try and convince the world that a defeat is in progress when in fact the opposite is the case. So the war itself at this stage of the game could be decided very, very rapidly, permanently, if Putin were to give the order and allow the forces to disregard the concern for civilians and property damage. But he hasn't done that. He has continued to negotiate, even though he recognizes that the people sitting across from him really are not in a position to deliver very much. They're being told what to do. And it's very obvious that Washington wants this to continue as long as possible in the hopes that Russia will be desperately harmed. I just don't see that happening. It's very tragic, but I think what will happen is the truth will out. Eventually, this will end. The Russians will be successful in what they've set out to do, and the Ukrainians will be destroyed. I'd rather not see that. I don't think Putin wants to see that. Remember, he's fighting against people that he largely considers to be very much like himself. There is no desire to murder all of these people, contrary to popular belief. The biggest lie I've heard repeated on television is, Russian troops have been told to deliberately murder civilians, Ukrainian civilians. It's absurd. It's nonsense. Nothing could be further from the truth. Do they make mistakes? Do munitions fall on things they'd rather not? Of course, we make those mistakes. Every military organization does. But it is as ridiculous to assert that the Russians are deliberately murdering civilians as it was to assert when we were in Vietnam or then subsequently involved in other wars in the Middle East, that we were deliberately murdering civilians. We were not.
So there you have it, from an expert on battlefield strategy and a former advisor to the Department of Defense, Colonel Douglas McGregor. Completely different perspective than you're getting from the mainstream news. And here's another perspective which isn't entirely correct. You know, the fake news narrative that the people of Russia hate Putin and he's in hiding? Another lie, folks. Not true. There was a report out just yesterday, I believe it was, that Putin made an appearance in a large, crowded stadium in Moscow. And Putin praised the Russian forces in Ukraine, and the crowd started chanting. Listen. I'm in!
И мы видим, как героически действуют и воюют наши ребята в ходе этой операции.
So there's just a short clip that, if you saw the video, it looked like a Trump rally almost. And I'm not comparing Trump to Putin or anything. I'm just telling you there's a great support in Russia right now. In fact, after Putin was able to give the people of Russia some information, proof about the bio labs in Ukraine, proof about the NATO staff in Ukraine, the moves with Ukraine trying to become a member of NATO, the fact that the Ukrainian government is riddled with neo-Nazis, and they had a pogrom, an ethnic cleansing of the Russians who were living in eastern Ukraine. The Russian people have given their full support to President Putin. Right or wrong, folks, I'm just telling you the facts. In fact, latest polls from Russia show an 80% approval rating by the Russian people in terms of what Putin's trying to do. So, of course, it's the exact opposite of what the Russian what the Western media tells us. And they'll say it's propaganda, and Russia says that's propaganda. And you know what? The truth is somewhere in between. That's how it always is. But if the Western media says it's propaganda, where's their proof? You heard it right there, folks. The crowds were cheering him. And like I said, it felt like a Trump rally. You know what? I believe God is allowing this to all happen because he is allowing the nations of the world to judge themselves. It reminds me of what Paul wrote to the Romans in Romans chapter 3, verses 10 through 18. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is open sepulchre. With their tongues they use deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. And the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. And then listen to what Jeremiah wrote in chapter 2, verse 19. Thine own wickedness shall correct thee. So all of these lies are going to lead to a war. And that's the goal. So our own wickedness will correct us, and our backslidings shall reprove us. Know therefore and see that it is an evil thing and bitter that thou hast forsaken the Lord thy God, and that my fear is not in thee, saith the Lord God of hosts. So God doesn't have to judge us. He's allowing us to our own ways. We're going to judge ourselves. But so I have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. Where are you at? There she is. Hey, Henrietta, I think she has spring fever, folks. Now, what I'd like to do today is talk about a very simple antiseptic that you can make in your home, and it's literally the miracle antiseptic, and that's colloidal silver. Now, it's one of the most potent disinfectants and antiseptics known to man. It's been used for thousands of years, and it's an on-contact killer of viruses, bacteria, fungus, and all sorts of germs, if you believe germ theory. But whatever, folks, it works. Now, my guess is that if you're like me, you probably want to make it because you can't find it. And when you do, it's very expensive. But it's so easy to make. So what I'd like to do is just walk you through it. It's only going to take a minute or two. So get your pens and paper and take a few notes. You need a couple feet of just common electrical wire. Stuff you have laying around the house. Even that zip cord from a lamp, that would work. Speaker cable, something like that. You need a couple small alligator clips, actually four of them, some electrical tape, 9-volt batteries, distilled water, some saline solution, you know, the eyewash drops. And then you need some silver. You can use, say, a foot of silver wire or even a silver dollar. You need a glass, and it has to be glass, not plastic or metal. And then go onto the internet and just look for an instructional video if you don't follow all this. You don't need to solder anything. You don't need to assemble anything other than hooking the wire up to the alligator. And then all you do, and it's so simple, is you hook one end of the alligator clip up to two pieces of silver, and then the other end of the alligator clips, and let it go. And once you're done, clean the oxidized wire that's now going to turn a little black with some cloth with baking soda and store everything until the next time. And what you have in that liquid, that saline solution of liquid, is colloidal silver. It might have a slightly off-color tint. That's the nanoparticles of silver colloid in there, which are available now. Bioavailable because they've been taken down to a nanoparticle size. That's kind of technology, folks, and it really works. So store it in a glass jar, away from the light, and use it when you need it. Folks, you can even drink it. But anyways, don't take too much. Your skin will start to turn a gray color, okay? How simple it is. Make yourself colloidal silver. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium. It's a breaking news report this week. that President Trump challenged the Rhino, Wisconsin Speaker of the House, Robin Voss, to do the right thing and correct the crime of the century immediately. So earlier, President Trump released the state who put Wisconsin House Speaker Robin Voss, a true Rhino, on the spot when he claimed that the legislature cannot decertify Wisconsin's stolen 2020 election. And folks, when this was all going down, I was on Wisconsin's election reporting website, the official website, watching the results come in and be tabulated. And in precinct after precinct after precinct, the number of votes cast exceeded the number of registered voters. In fact, it was so bad that I did screen captures and sent to the White House website. I couldn't believe I was watching this happen. Now here, nearly 2 years later, they're starting to see that everything that anybody who could think and critically discern saw back then on November 4th, November 5th of 2020. So Voss admitted that widespread voter fraud actually occurred in Wisconsin. So here you have the Wisconsin Speaker of the House admitting the voter fraud occurred. This was done in a closed-door meeting with a group of concerned Wisconsin residents who were pushing for decertification. But then Voss wrongly claimed that the legislature does not have the power to decertify an election, and then he's saying, well, we just have to get them in 2020. Folks, this is a house built on a foundation of sand, and that's never good. So what I'd like to do is have you listen to Rhino Voss double talk, and that's essentially what it is.
But we have passed 17 different bills. We have the Gateman investigation that I know is showing many of the issues that are there. The problem gets down to what's the remedy. There are some people who think that the legislature has the unilateral ability to overturn the election. We do not. Constitutional scholars like Rick Essenberg, Jim Trippas, Donald Trump's own attorney in Wisconsin said we do not have that power. I still believe that today. What they spent much of the time talking about is a private conversation, but basically they are trying to convince us of the fraud that occurred. I already believe there was fraud that occurred. The challenge is we now need to have an attorney general and a governor who will sign legislation and fight with us to make sure that the election in 2022 and 2024 is fair. We don't have the ability to unilaterally overturn the election.
Do you think there was widespread fraud or just a few instances?
I think there was widespread fraud. And I think we are going to see more and more data that comes out as Justice Gateman continues his investigation. But it's up to the people of Wisconsin to decide who they want to lead their state. If they want to have Tony Evers and Josh Call, who have obstructed the investigation and a fair election in every way they possibly could, that's what they can vote for in November. I think we have a better remedy with candidates who will say that we'll pass election integrity investigation or election integrity. We will pass election integrity legislation. We'll follow up on the findings from the nonpartisan audit bureau and Will, who have all found that there were problems. The Democrats still have not yet admitted that there were any issues with the 2020 election, and every investigation has shown there were many. So I think we should focus on the solution, which is a new governor, a new attorney general, the ability to have, as we move forward, solutions that can actually become law, as opposed to ideas, which, again, are totally untested, never been done in the history of our country. We can't have a legislature decertify an election.
Thank you.
So there you heard it from the very mouth of Speaker Robin Voss. And so on March 17th, President Trump releases this statement. And this is true. Speaker Voss of the great state of Wisconsin just said there was widespread fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Folks, you heard it. But the state legislature cannot do anything about it. And then President Trump says, wrong. If you rob the diamonds from a jewelry store, if you get caught, you have to give the diamonds back. Votes should be no different. There is already a very powerful resolution in the Wisconsin State Assembly that calls for the decertification of the 2020 election and reclaiming of Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes. So here's the game that's going on. There's one side that says the legislature does it. The other side says the governor and the attorney general does it. It's a little bit of he said, she said, you know, going to mom when dad says no and going to dad when mom says no. So you got fingers pointing both directions. Now, a lot has been exposed by the special counsel, Michael Gableman. So much has been out. Things like Mark Zuckerberg pumping $8.8 million into this fraud of stealing votes in nursing homes and, you know, stuffing ballot boxes. Like I said, folks, if you go out, and I don't know if it's still out there or not, I've archived it, but you could see that in most of these precincts, the number of votes cast exceeded the number of registered voters. So what can I say? This is craziness, but it's time to keep moving because we have more craziness in the Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
I'd like to start with a funny yet sad Absurdian report. This just out this week, Oregon's top children's hospital teaches young boys to tuck their genitals, and it directs them to quote-unquote sex shop. So if you have any small children, maybe you want to have them leave the room for this part. But the Dornbecker Children's Hospital in Portland, Oregon, just issued this disturbing instructional material, and I have images of it here, folks, of actual diagrams showing young boys how they can tuck their genitals and put their testicles up inside their body. Now, I'm reading from this document. Tucking is not just for males. The Dornberger Children's Hospital assures that tucking is moving the penis, testicles, or both out of the way. This makes the genital area look smoother and flatter. Tucking can reduce any concerns you may have about your body, how your clothes fit, and how safe you feel in public. People of all genders can tuck. And then the guy goes on with a disclaimer and says, terminology used here may be offensive, but we're using terminology to identify certain body parts that you may not identify with. Folks, this is total insanity. But then it gets even more serious with the next Absurdian report. Turncoat Mitt Romney, the only Republican senator to vote in favor of children being forced to continue to wear face diapers in school, he tweets out that Tulsi Gabbard, you know, the former Democratic candidate for president, is parroting a false Russian propaganda line, and her tweets are treasonous lies that may well cost lives. So this is something that a seated senator says to another politician. And then Tulsi Gabbard blasts Romney. Listen to this 4-minute clip of Tulsi just calling him out.
Senator Romney, you've called me a treasonous liar simply for stating the fact that there are over 25 U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine, which, if breached, would release and spread deadly pathogens across the United States and the world, and therefore they must be secured so that we can prevent any new pandemics from occurring. Now, bizarrely, you claim that securing these labs, or even calling for securing these labs, is treasonous and will lead to a loss of life, when the exact opposite is obviously true. The spread of pathogens is what will cause the loss of life, not the prevention of such a spread. So, Senator Romney, please provide evidence that what I've said is not true and treasonous. And if you cannot, you should do the honorable thing. Apologize. Resign from the U.S. Senate. Evidence of the existence of these biolabs in Ukraine, their vulnerability, and therefore the need to take immediate action to secure them is beyond dispute. Just the other day, the State Department's Victoria Nuland acknowledged that these labs that contain dangerous pathogens exist in Ukraine in her testimony to the U.S. Senate.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
In a Pentagon fact sheet dated March 11th, there are numerous statements that both directly and indirectly confirm the existence of these biolabs. The United States, through BTRP, has invested approximately $200 million in Ukraine since 2005, supporting 46 Ukrainian laboratories, health facilities, and diagnostic sites. On CBS Face the Nation on March 13th, CBS National Security Correspondent David Martin said that he'd spoken to a Pentagon official just that morning who told him they're concerned about the existence of these biolabs in Ukraine.
The concern is that the Russians will seize one of these biomedical research facilities that Ukraine has, where they do research on deadly pathogens like botulism and anthrax, seize one of those facilities, weaponize the pathogen, and then blame it on Ukraine and the U.S. because the U.S. has been providing support for some of the research being done in those facilities.
Now, in April of 2020, in refuting Russia's accusations that the U.S. was using biolabs in Ukraine to develop biological weapons, the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine acknowledged that there are U.S.-funded labs in Ukraine working with pathogens for vaccines and other peaceful purposes. In a CNN fact check on March 10, 2022, there are U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine. That much is true. Furthermore, according to the DOD, there are two biolabs in Ukraine that have been under Russian control for quite some time. Russia illegally took possession of two Ukrainian-owned laboratories that BTRP upgraded in 2014 and continues to deny Ukrainian access to these facilities. So, Senator Romney, you have a choice. Out of pride, continue to deny the truth, or admit that you're wrong, apologize, and resign. Aloha, and remember that without the truth, we can be neither safe nor free.
Well said, Tulsi Gabbard. Folks, it's only treasonous if our country was Ukraine. But I don't think this is Ukraine. Romney's advisor, one of his advisors on his staff, is literally on the board of Burisma. You know, the oil company that Hunter Biden used to head? That's right. But, Paul, it even gets worse. And listen carefully to this next tidbit. Do you know what all these people have in common? Pelosi's son, John Kerry's son, Mitt Romney's son, Biden's son. Here's a hint. It all involves Ukraine. Here's another hint. It all involves energy. Coincidence? You know, I don't think so. When George Soros calls, folks, the Democrats and the rhinos, they always answer. They line up for their marching orders. I'm telling you, there's some sick stuff happening. But I believe the American people and the people of this world are waking up, and I pray that nothing can stop the awakening. But, you know, only time will tell. Moving, folks, and it's time for Ken's Corner. Spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now, today what I'd like to share with you is what I've learned about political types. So we've got this Nazism versus communism debate, discussion, whatever you want to call it. And here's how the establishment compares the two. They say communism falls to the far left of the political spectrum, while Nazism is believed to be on the far right of the spectrum. So out of all the realm of possibilities, the establishment wants us to believe on the far right you have the Nazis, and on the far left you have the communists. And they go on to say that communists strive to create a classless society, whereas Nazism tries to establish a society ruled by a superior race. Communism detests private property and entrepreneurship, whereas Nazism finds nothing objectionable about private property. Now, these ideas are true, but that's not the whole fact. And then they go on to say that Nazism is associated with Hitler's Nazi Party of Germany, which is true, but it means the National Socialistic Party. And remember what some of the Russian founders of communism had to say about socialism. It's indispensable to communism. And then they go on to say, but communism associated with the Soviet Union and Karl Marx. Now stop and think critically for a minute here, folks. Think about this left-right scale, as they refer to it. How can two forms of totalitarian authority be on the opposite end of political views? And the reason I'm asking you that is, where does liberal democracy come in? How about anarchy? No government at all. And what's in the center? Well, don't the fundamental differences in political philosophy range from authoritarianism to individualism? So on the far left, you have authoritarianism. On the far right, you have individualism. And if you take it to the extreme, anarchy. So I put Nazism and communism on the left, communists being further left than the Nazis, both being on the left. And both being authoritarian, like I said, being further left than the Nazis, because the Nazis allowed private property, yet government control, and that's where the term fascism comes in. And then in the middle, I'd put parliamentary-type governments, you know, these representative democracies, you know, countries like Sweden. And then center to the left, you've got countries like the U.S., and then center to the right, the extremists, individuals, anarchists, and that's dangerous too. So this scale is actually being distorted by the establishment to put us in a little subset of all the possible political spectrums. So communism and Nazism are both on the left. Communism is a war of the classes, Nazism is a war of the races. And here's some interesting quotes from the Nazis. My political sentiments inclined towards the left and emphasized the socialist aspect of every bit as much as the nationalist ones. That was one of Hitler's right-hand men, Adolf Eichmann. Here's another one Eichmann said. Our time was that National Socialism and Communism of the Soviet Republic were sort of siblings. Named Joseph Goebbels, another one of Hitler's right-hand men, said Lenin is the greatest man, second only to Hitler. And that the difference between communism and Hitler, faith is very slight. And here's Hitler himself in a speech from November 1941 in Munich, Germany. Basically, National Socialism and Marxism are the same. And he went on to say, I've learned a great deal from Marxism, as I do not hesitate to admit the difference between Marxists and myself, this is Hitler speaking, is that I have really put into practice what these peddlers and pen pushers timidly begun. The whole of National Socialism is based on it. Look at the workers' sports clubs, the industrial cells, the mass demonstrations, the propaganda leaflets written specifically for the comprehension of the masses. All these new methods of political struggle are essentially Marxist in origin. All I had to do is take over these methods and adapt them to our purpose. Those are the words of Adolf Hitler, folks. Now, the United States established what's known as a constitutional republic with limited government, and that primary development aren't here to provide our happiness, but only to ensure that we may pursue it. And yet today, what do we hear? What do you hear in the news all the time? You hear a lot of people saying, well, the job of the federal government is to keep us safe. Folks, if you sacrifice a little bit of your freedom for safety, soon you'll have neither. And it's wrong to think that the primary job of the federal government is actually to protect our God-given, unalienable rights and to keep us free. No. The purpose of the federal government is really about protection. The protection of our rights and the insurance that tyranny doesn't enter into our government. It's all about assuring that each and every one of us, as individuals, has the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, ourselves from foreign enemies. But I have to keep moving, folks. I could talk so much more on this, but now it's time for Back to the Future, where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. Now, today, folks, what I'd like to do is wind the clock back, wind it all the way back to 1848, when a man named Karl Marx wrote a pamphlet called The Communist Manifesto, or originally The Manifesto of the Communist Party. In fact, he had a sidekick named Friedrich Engels, and this work was commissioned by the Communist League and originally published in London just as these revolutions of 1948 began to erupt across Europe. Now, Marx was, like I said, commissioned by the League of the Just, later known as the Communist League. In fact, a year before they approached him, and he was kind of poor, living in a rundown apartment, and he needed money. So in 1947, Marx began to write the manifesto, and then they paid him to rewrite it and revise it a year later. And this was intended to incite violent revolution, which is the very recipe of tyranny itself. Isn't that what happens? Ordo ab caeo, problem, reaction, solution. And it was later used as propaganda to blind followers to the reality of the brutal dictatorships that all these tyrannical governments ultimately end up in. And then Hitler's Mein Kampf and Mao's Little Red Book, they kind of just picked up on this. We heard Hitler's own words there in Ken's Corner, didn't we? He sees very little difference. He just acted upon what these philosophers wrote about. So dictators throughout history, all the way up today, attempt to disguise tyranny with these fancy labels, these philosophies, to make slavery somehow an essential. You know, it's that where nothing and happy. These are examples of what earlier was the divine rule of God. So you take this in communist manifesto, really dark. These 10 points are really dastardly. Superior and starting to deliver our country. The president, Congress, implicit folks. And what I do now is read these to you and think about things that in the Congress is abolition of property and land and application of all rents of land to public purpose. Do we have the EPA coming in and taking over people's land if there's a certain snail or bug or bird that lives there? Do they tell you you can't reclaim wetlands on your property if you're a farmer and you want to put it into production for agriculture? Of course they do, and that's the abolition of private property. Number two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. What's coming up here very soon? Tax day. Abolition of all rights of inheritance. Did you know there was actually some new legislation passed under the Trump administration, which goes after your IRAs and your retirement plans? Maybe I'll do a segment on that next week. Confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Isn't that what they're doing with people that they accuse of drug dealing? Isn't that what they do with people that are innocent until proven guilty when they seize their assets? What about all these yachts of these oligarchs that they're seizing? Centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and exclusive monopoly. Too big to fail banks, folks. Come on. The Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor has any reserves, it's just a money printing mechanism owned by the one percenters. Centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. That's number six. How about all the censorship that's going on? Extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of soil generally in accordance with the common plan. We have the Department of Agriculture and all their guidelines. They pay farmers not to farm. Come on, folks. The EPA sticking its nose in every single business. OSHA doing the same thing. And then number eight, equal liability of all to labor. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. You can see it all over. Obama established the Corps. He wanted everybody to serve in it. Number nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries. Gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. They've created these giant farm factories now, folks, and they're trying to move everybody into these settings where they rewild a lot of the country. And finally, free education for all the children in public schools. Let's call them what they are, government schools. Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, combination of education with industrial production. So they say, oh, it's bad. Child labor is bad, which it is. Let's step in and take over education so that we force our propaganda down the throats of all these children. So that's essentially what the manifesto was all about. Now let's wind the clock ahead about 120 years or so to 1971, when Gary Allen wrote this book called None Dare Calls. None Dare Call It Conspiracy. And I'm telling you, folks, this is a thought-provoking read. I read it about 25, 30 years ago, found it at an estate sale or a book sale, and I probably have 10 copies on my shelf. I buy it every time I see it. Dated, but I'm telling you, the information in that book is still relevant. Here's a couple quotes I want to read from it, three in fact. Number one, if you have total government, it makes little difference whether you call it communism, fascism, socialism, Caesarism, heroism. It's all pretty much the same from the standpoint of the people who must live and suffer under it. And that's what I was saying in Ken's Corner, folks. And then here's a second quote from Gary Allen. FDR once said, in politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. And that's the truth, folks. You can't get things wrong all the time. If things are going wrong all the time, it's by design. And then finally, here's the final quote. If you study Marx's Communist Manifesto, you'll find that, in essence, Marx said the proletarian revolution would establish the socialistic dictatorship of the proletariat. To achieve the socialistic dictatorship of the proletariat, three things have to be accomplished. Number one, elimination of all right to private property. The Great Reset, folks, where you'll own nothing and be happy. Number two, the dissolution of the family unit. Don't we see that happening? The blurring of gender identification, the blurring of what a family truly is with mom, dad, and the children. And finally, the destruction of what Marx referred to as the opiate of the people, religion. Folks, they've even gotten in to our churches now, and they're watering down the gospel. I'm telling you, this book hit the nail right on the head. So how does this apply to today? What do we know about today? Well, Russell Brand did a really good mock of Klaus Schwab and his whole narrative of owning nothing. This dude, Klaus Schwab, was out on a business trip, and somebody parked in his parking spot because they were late for a meeting, and Schwab flipped out. And this is fact, folks. Listen to Russell Brand mock it.
A bit jealous of Klaus Schwab, the way he's marching around like a dignitary. Klaus Schwab, is my Nobel Prize here yet? You're not getting a Nobel Peace Prize for trying to destroy everyone's lives. What do you get them for? Peace! At the Forum's headquarters in Switzerland, a tax haven. What are you there for? The Toblerones? When a Forum employee who was late for a meeting once pulled into Schwab's spot in the parking lot, aware that the boss was overseas, he caught wind of it and insisted she be fired, relenting only after senior staff intervened to save her. Senior staff? Oh, no, don't sack somebody, Klaus, for taking your parking spot. But what about my Nobel Prize? Well, that's not that peaceful. When he's dealing with someone nicking his parking spot, where's his, like, slogan, their catchphrase down the form? Committed to improving the state of the world. Hey! Get out of my fucking parking spot! Oh, sorry, I thought you were on holiday. And you were. Yeah, but it's still my parking spot. It should be empty. Sorry. You're fucking fired!
There you have it, said by a comedian himself, a lefty who's starting to wake up. You know, Stalin once said that peace is the absence of opposition to socialism. So, folks, these are crazy times. And do you know that in these crazy times, you can hear the voice of God and be sure of his plan for your life? And all you have to do is follow Abram's example on how to find and fulfill God's will or plan for your life. And when you do, you'll be rewarded with victory and blessings and joy unspeakable, you know? And how do you do that? By putting your gift of saving faith into action. Praying and knowing the will of God is essential. And to have that, you need a strong saving faith. Now, we usually pray, Lord, if it is your will. But that's not the best way to pray, folks. It isn't. And that's basically saying you don't know his will. If you say, if it is your will, No. A better way to pray is by knowing his will and praying his will. So how do we get to know his will? By reading his word. Charles Spurgeon said, little faith will bring your soul to heaven, but great faith will bring heaven to your soul. You know, Jesus promised us eternal life now. So if we understand this, and if we live by faith and not by sight, then God will use us to do miracles and glorify his name as we work with Jesus to set the captives free. Amen? So how would you like to have this great saving faith and to know God's will and have victory in Jesus? Well, all you have to do is understand that once you were brought to salvation, the Lord Jesus Christ, God enrolled you in what I'll call the school of faith. Now, life is a classroom of sorts, okay? And the Bible's the textbook, and the prophets and the apostles are the teachers and professors, and Abram is the dean of the school of faith. You know, in this study, this message, we're going to learn about Abram and this faith that he had. So I'd encourage you to read Hebrews chapter 11, okay, and Romans chapter 4, and understand that Abram is the father of all who believe. That's why I call him the dean of the school of saving faith. In a sense, he cornered the market on the teaching of faith. Now, please understand that this concept of what I call saving faith isn't incidental to fellowship with God. No, it's fundamental. It truly is. And it's the mark of every true believer, every true Christian. The Bible says in Hebrews chapter 6, without faith, it's impossible to please God. So do you want to please God? Well, remember, if you please God, it doesn't matter who you displease. And if you displease God, it doesn't matter who you please. There's no way to please God without exercising the gift of saving faith. Now, before Christians were called Christians, they were called believers. And the point is that our chief duty is to believe God. The Bible says in John chapter 6, verse 29, as Jesus answered them and said unto them, this is the work of God, that ye believe on he who he has sent. And that is none other than Jesus himself. So if you want to serve God, then your chief duty is to believe Jesus. Now, the supreme evil is unbelief. A lot of people say, well, no, murder, rape, arson, pillage, tyranny, those are greater sins than unbelief. But no, that's not true. The Bible says in John chapter 3, verse 6, I'm reading it out of the Amplified here because it's the best rendering. And he who believes in, has faith in, clings to, relies on the Son, has, now possesses eternal life. But whoever disobeys, is unbelieving toward, refuses to trust in, disregards, is not subject to the Son, will never see or experience life. But instead, the wrath of God abides in him. That's God's displeasure remains upon him. His indignation hangs over him continually. So when the Spirit of God comes into the world, he comes into the world to convict you and me of sin because we believe not. He first loved us so that we could love him. Now, folks, I'm out of time, and I have a lot more to cover on this message, so I'm going to have to pick it up next week, okay? But I want to encourage you right now to know that you can know God's plan for your life, and you can please God by faith. For without faith, it's impossible to please God. So our responsibility isn't to totally understand God, because we never will. And if you think you do, then you're not worshiping the God of creation. Our primary responsibility is to readily obey. And the point is that if you don't obey what you already know, don't ask for more light and more truth, because God's not going to give it to you until you obey what he's already revealed to you. So I encourage you, folks, get into your Bibles. And then in the words of Winston Churchill, stand true, folks, to the truth and never give in. Never give in. Never give in.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
Folks, I love you all, and just remember to live by faith and not by sight.
Shall be moved, and the power.